Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On site. On site.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Almost as soon as they got their hands on it, critics started talking about the more industrial aspects of this new Kanye West record. What did they mean by that? Well, so-called industrial music is that loud, sometimes abrasive genre that came out of the post-punk movement of the mid-70s and brought about cult bands like Throbbing Gristle and Cabaret Voltaire, as well as more mainstream acts, eventually, like Nine Inch Nails. Author and composer S. Alexander Reed has recently published a history of the genre. It's called Assimilate, A Critical History of Industrial Music. Alex, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John.
So, where did industrial music come from? I mean, let's define our musical terms here.
Sure. Industrial music, in terms of where it comes from, starts off in a few different places, all interestingly more or less at the same time. You can find its origins in northern England, you can find its origins in Berlin, and you can find its origins in San Francisco, and a few other key places. But in each of these cases, it's reacting to the urban environment around it. And that's chiefly because it is a music that is invested in figuring out what controls us in our daily lives, whether that's the city or technology or commerce, and then using the sounds and the signs of that stuff as a weapon against those controlling forces. So
So genuinely industrial sounds.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, using tape recording technology to record things like, you know, factory noises.
For sure. You mentioned Cabaret Voltaire, and the guys in Cabaret Voltaire, Chris Watson especially, used to drive around Sheffield and use a tape recorder to record the sounds of factories and the sounds of cars going by, and then they would actually broadcast it from speakers mounted on top of their van in the hopes of confusing the urban experience and revealing to everyone just how noisy and how industrialized their daily lives were.
Now, so that almost sounds like performance art, which a lot of the early industrial bands, they almost were like performance artists. There's an evolution that takes place. I think most people now, when they hear the word industrial, they think of bands like Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor.
Right.
And maybe we can talk about how we get to that stage eventually, but is Trent Reznor, is Nine Inch Nails the kind of the flag bearer for industrial music, for better or worse?
Sure. We can say yes.
Because you sound like you don't want to say yes. But.
Well, I mean, genre is defined by not just the bands themselves or not just by me, but it's defined by all the fans as well and by the media. And so if people call it industrial, then there's only so much choice that you can have in the matter.
So this is the sort of the mainstream version of industrial music, we
Absolutely.
Can say.
And what's interesting is that in the early 1980s, though it starts off as this very noisy, rhythmless, sort of swampy sounding music, they started putting in dance beats into this music, and it starts off as like a send-up, a mockery of disco music or of rock music, but it didn't take long before they started saying, hey, this feels pretty good to play this guitar, or this feels pretty good to dance, and so what might have been some kind of political commentary on the mass-produced nature of pop music turns into a genuine pleasure that people are taking as musicians and as fans in this music.
This is Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. They have a new single called Came Back Haunted. It was released earlier this month. First single from the album Hesitation Marks, which will be released in September.
Something inside of me.
Came Back Haunted is the new single from Trent Reznor and the band Nine Inch Nails, which for many years has been kind of the visible face of the industrial music movement, the music genre that is the subject of S. Alexander Reed's book, Assimilate, A Critical History of Industrial Music. You were speaking a moment ago, Alex, about how industrial music, this kind of dark, swampy, as you put it, this kind of miasma of sound comes to evolve into industrial dance music, which mm-hmm. is much more along the Nine Inch Nails vein of things. When does that happen? Is that mid-80s? Is that under the spell of new wave and, you know, electro clash and all the stuff that was happening then?
It certainly gets a lot of momentum in the mid-1980s. You can see the roots of it going back really to 1979. You mentioned Throbbing Gristle earlier. Throbbing Gristle is the band that nearly everyone points to as being the progenitors of industrial music. And they released this album called 20 Jazz Funk Greats. And I talked about sending up pop music.
Yeah.
A title like that is absolutely a send-up. Because, of course, it doesn't have 20 tracks, and they're not jazz, and it's not funk, and some would call it great. But that's basically a dance record.
From a band who, up to that point,
had only made
nothing
noise.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, their music before that was just... And then you'd get, you know, the lead singer, Genesis Peorge, mumbling about serial killers. And so you start seeing these sort of rhythmic ideas in the early 80s. And there's also a lot of permeability between genres at this point, because a lot of things are getting started. Synth pop is getting started. You have this whole legion of bands like the Human League and Depeche Mode at that time, who are called futurist bands, who are doing shows with industrial acts. And then you have post-punk bands. And so... There was a negotiation.
And the goth movement.
For sure, yeah. At the Batcave Club in London and things like that. I mean, there was a lot of negotiation of what these genres were going to be, and they were still kind of a murky group of styles. But as there was a lot of interchange between them, by the mid-1980s, not only do you get a lot more rhythmic and much more tonal musical ideas happening in industrial music, but you start seeing more verse-chorus structures.
Yeah.
And that's also an issue of people realizing that there's a little bit of money to be made and that, you know, there are crowds who want to see them, and so you have to put on a show, and so you have to start shouting instead of mumbling. And so you start getting bands like Nitzer Ebb and Front 242 and Ministry, and then, of course, 1989, Nine Inch Nails' first album comes out. And they, together, really formed this entire new school of industrial music, which is dance-oriented.
It's interesting you mentioned Ministry, because, of course, they came out of that new wave dance rock kind of thing.
For sure.
And then went more heavy and dark and into the industrial thing. If I were to ask you, Alex, to come up with, to name three essential industrial bands for listeners who, you know, just want to kind of get a sense of who the main players are,
yeah,
who would the first of those be?
Oh, it's tempting to say Throbbing Gristle, but I'll start off people with something a little bit more swallowable. The band that probably best assembles all of the ingredients of industrial music, from the noisy side to the dancey side to the melodic side to the harsher side, I would say Skinny Puppy. And this is a Canadian industrial group that gets started in 1982, and they're still around. They just put out another record. They really bring this aspect of the gothic into the music. They're very abject, they're very grimy and dirty, and their music always sounds like their lead singer, whose name is Ogre, is practically turning inside out. It's full of guts and grossness, and it's a really identifiable sound that I think nearly everyone from every side of the industrial scene at least likes a little bit of something by Skinny Puppy.
So this is a song called Warlock from that Canadian Vancouver-based band of long renown in the industrial music scene.
Thing that's real. Stop me. Stop me. Insane. Insane.
Canadian band known as Skinny Puppy, long-time figures, major figures on the so-called industrial music scene. My guest is S. Alexander Reed here in the Soundcheck studio, visiting professor at NYU's Clive Davis Institute of Recorded Music and author of the book Assimilate, A Critical History of Industrial Music. That title comes from Skinny Puppy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Their big breakthrough single is a song called Assimilate, and it's one that you can still hear if you go out to industrial and goth clubs, you know, here in New York City at you know, any weekend of the year.
Mm-hmm. Does the song title have sort of a broader significance for you in the context of this book?
For sure. One of the things about industrial music is how heavily political it is and how interested in transgression it is and how much it pits itself against these supposed all-controlling forces, these hegemonies. Mm. And so it is concerned with, like I said earlier, using the tools of these forces against themselves, assimilating the evils of the world even as it is threatened by being assimilated by those evils.
So there's a kind of ambiguity here because, of course, among those forces are market forces.
Sure.
And, you know, you want to make a living. you referred to this before as, you know, as industrial gave way to industrial dance when bands realized, oh, there are people who want to see us. Mm-hmm. We need to put on shows. So the movement has had to kind of wrestle with its own, however limited, its own successes, too.
For sure. And it's not strictly an anti-capitalist, solely Marxist movement. It has all kinds of political extremes within it. And there have been a lot of ways that people have navigated that, some successfully, some less so. One interesting chapter is that in the early and mid-1990s, you mentioned Nine Inch Nails, when Nine Inch Nails really breaks through, all these major labels were saying, oh, we have to go get an industrial band. Mm. Let's go sign Skinny Puppy. That's what American Records did. Let's sign Front 242. That's what Sony did. And all these bands who had been underground successes in the 1980s got foisted out into the public. And actually, despite the fact that people were hoping that it would be the next big thing, it didn't quite catch on. There was about 10 minutes when it seemed like it would be in about 1994, 95. But most of these bands, it ended up harming them, in some cases irreparably. Skinny Puppy, for example, lost a member to a heroin overdose during that time.
All right. So I asked you for three essential industrial bands. Skinny Puppy first on your list. Who else?
I would go with the German band Einstürzende Neubauten. Mm-hmm. That's a German phrase that means collapsing new buildings in English, and they are very much a product of the Berlin scene of the late 1970s and early 1980s. And Berlin is this really interesting city at that time. You're having all these riots and leftist extremist movements because there were subventions for young people living in West Germany to go live in West Berlin with a stipend, basically, if they were students, and it would also absolve them of having to serve in the military. And so what it meant is that you had a hotbed of radicalism that, on one hand, West Germany was trying to shove in the faces of East Berlin to say, look at how artsy and wonderful our culture is. Don't you want to be like us? But on the other hand, it meant that they put all the anti-government people together in one place. And so they were squatting around in this city that had only, you know, 2 million people, but it was built for 5 million. And there is just this real strange sense of anarchism going on, and a sense that they couldn't trust their parents because their parents had been all complicit under the Third Reich. And so it was kind of a year zero moment for bands like Einstürzende Neubauten.
Whose early records really did consist of, you know, metal drums and tubes being banged around and stuff. They would eventually get into the industrial dance thing too. But what track have you chosen for us?
I've chosen a track called Seele Brennt. And while Skinny Puppy and other bands who do dance music are very electronic, Einstürzende Neubauten really does, as you say, have the sound of banging on the things in the room around them. It's the sound of banging on the empty spaces of Berlin, really. And so this is a song that has a lot of hand-based percussion. And interestingly, the timing of this song is all based around the physical pulse of the lead singer's body. And so
that's Blixa Bargeld.
Exactly, Blixa Bargeld.
Seele Brennt, Souls Burn, from the German band Einstürzende Neubauten. Oh! Deine Seele brennt, my soul burns, says Blixabargeld, leader of the band Einstürzende Neubauten, formed in West Berlin around 1980 and key players in the industrial music scene. Alex Reed with me here in the studio. You make the point that this thing that we've just heard eventually leads to Stomp, the family-friendly percussion troupe on Broadway and around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting if you look at how they were reappropriating the city around them, the barricades that were being used in these riots, the oil drums, the technology that had been abandoned after the Second World War, and banging on them to show everyone and to show themselves and to kind of abreact for themselves this sense of emptiness and this sense of the shell of their world that had been left by this military-industrial complex. Mm. And so if you take the most surface-level element of that, banging on oil drums or breaking glass as a piece of percussion, that's something that's, you know, kind of cool and edgy that a lot of people can get into in the right context. And so part of the story of industrial music is continually how it's been reappropriated by other people. And you mentioned Kanye West earlier as a good example of people using elements from industrial music elsewhere.
And let's not forget that, you know, when Einstürzende Neubauten started playing, playing for them often meant destroying whatever space they were in. So it was, they were a hard band to book into your club.
Oh, for sure. When I saw them play a few years ago, they had a huge fire pit that they had microphones held up to. And so you had initially the sound of the fire, but then you had the sound of the microphones, you know, burning and melting as those microphones were destroyed. There's a lot of sense of transgression going on in industrial music as a sort of philosophical tenet. The idea being that if you break some rule that's unwritten, then you've revealed the rule, and it's now written, and everyone knows what they can fight against and who the enemy is.
Alex's book is called Assimilate, A Critical History of Industrial Music. All right, so Skinny Puppy, Einstürzende Neubauten. You've already mentioned the band Front 242 a couple of times.
Sure.
They're the third of the troika, the three big bands that we should know?
That's what I'm saying today anyway. I think that Front 242 is a good example to use. They come out of this Belgian movement called EBM, Electronic Body Music, which gets started around 1984 or so. And unlike Skinny Puppy, which is dirty and messy and sort of drippy sounding, Front 242 and bands like them, like Nitzer Ebb, who are English, they're very obsessed with cleanliness and with impenetrability, and so it's almost a calisthenic kind of music, and it's very male, but not in any kind of traditional heteronormative way. And it's about the impregnability of the body, and it's about the strength of the individual, presumably against some sort of massive force. But as a result, you get these sort of clenched gut pronunciations of the lyrics. And it tends to have a very electronic, pure sound. Mm.
And while they do sing in German occasionally, many of their songs are in English.
Yeah, because they're Belgian, and actually a huge number of these EBM bands are coming out of Belgium. There was less of a sense of national identity than you got with the English bands or the American bands. When I spoke with some of the Belgian artists in this, they almost uniformly said, we really didn't have any sense of nationalism. We didn't have any sense of what it meant to be Belgian. And so they were just as happy to sing in French or even Dutch or German or English. And so you'll find some bands like Agrum, for example, using Spanish and French and English all in the same song. Mm.
Well, this song's in English. It's called Headhunter, version 1.0 from Front 242.
At least
And that is some industrial dance music, let's call it, from the band Front 242 out of Belgium. Headhunter is the song, and Alex, you mentioned EBM, electronic body music. That is definitely, you know, there's a very strong dance element to this. And it's important to kind of restate that that is as much a part of the industrial movement as the clanging and banging of Einstürzen und Neubauten that we heard just a few minutes ago.
It is functionally. What's interesting about the industrial scene, and this starts around 1985 when the dance element comes in, is there is a little bit of a factionalization. You do get some people who are these noise purists who only listen to what they call harsh noise wall music, for example, or power electronics, bands like White House. And then you get these people who are really heady and intellectual who only want to listen to the experimental end of things, like Häffler Trio. But in terms of the sheer proportions of the industrial scene and of people who call this music industrial, that's actually a pretty small percentage of it. I mean, if you go out to an event that's billed as an industrial music night, you're going to hear the dance stuff.
Right.
And that is the stuff that people have loved, and it's the stuff that has most influenced the world around us. And so as much as I have affection and respect for the really heady stuff, it's important to recognize just how big a player the dance side of things is.
And so that's where Nine Inch Nails comes from. That's when critics write all this week about the industrial aspects of the new Kanye West record. That's the sort of flavor of industrial music they're talking about as well. Where do you see industrial music in the 21st century? I mean, we've been talking about bands that came up in the 80s.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So what's the relevance of this today?
A few things. I mean, so after I mentioned this sort of big corporate boom in the 1990s when Nine Inch Nails was coming out and they were signing bands like Gravity Kills, after that happened, the whole sort of underground scene had to reinvent itself and had to sort of reimagine what it would mean to be industrial, because the future as it had been envisioned in the early 80s had happened, and it wasn't any better. In fact, it was just much more boring. So in the 21st century, around 2000, we get this whole very, very synth-pop driven element of the scene, what some people call future pop, but much more today. There's a lot of industrial influence in these sort of underground scenes, these sort of synth wave and witch house scenes that you see out in Brooklyn, for example. And they are in many cases reaching back to those early 80s bands like Coil and like Throbbing Gristle, and almost imagining as if the previous two decades had never happened. They throw away the 90s, they throw away 2000 and 2005, and they sort of say, all right, let's go back to old drum machines, let's go back to external sound processors for our voice, and sort of reimagine a much more sort of hip-hop influenced version of this.
So Witch House.
Witch House would be one good example, yeah.
A species of hip-hop that has very kind of industrial kind of fundamental layer that it's built on.
Yeah, for sure. And for people listening, the visual thing to look out for here is the triangle, which has now become fashionably ubiquitous. If you see the sort of black filled-in triangle with or like inverted or regular crosses, triangles and crosses are the kind of visual
emblems.
Signal, yeah, of this stuff.
Give us an example of some witch house, the current, one of the current iterations of industrial music.
Sure. I think they'd probably object to calling it an iteration of industrial, but it's so much in the lineage. A band like Salem, for example, who really breaks in 2010 would be a good example. And there are other acts like maybe Creep, or I'm a huge fan of the band Light Asylum. And they all have actually a pretty different sound from one another, but they're all participating in the same kind of visual aesthetics and the same lineage and the same musical heritage.
So a style of music that grew up in the late 70s, still finding ways to be relevant today. That style is industrial music. And S. Alexander Reed, my guest here in the Soundcheck studio today, is author of the book Assimilate: A Critical History of Industrial Music. Alex, it's been very illuminating. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.